Ender sat in a corner of the battle room, his arm hooked through a handhold, watching Bean practice with his squad. Yesterday they had worked on attacks without guns, disarming enemies with their feet. Ender had helped them with some techniques from gravity personal combat. Many things had to be changed, but inertia in flight was a tool that could be used against the enemy as easily in nullo as in Earth gravity. Today, though, Bean had a new toy. It was a deadline. One of the thin, almost invisible twines used during construction in space to hold two objects together. Deadlines were sometimes kilometers long. This one was just a bit longer than a wall of the battle room, and yet it looped easily, almost invisibly, around Bean's waist. He pulled it off like an article of clothing and handed one end to one of his soldiers. "Hook it to a handhold and wind it around a few times." Bean carried the other end across the battle room. As a tripwire, it wasn't too useful, Bean decided. It was invisible enough, but one strand of twine wouldn't have much chance of stopping an enemy that could easily go above or below it. Then he got the idea of using it to change his direction of movement in midair. He fastened it around his waist, the other end still fastened to a handhold, slipped a few meters away, and launched himself straight out. The twine caught him, changed his direction abruptly, and swung him in an arc that crashed him brutally against the wall. He screamed and screamed. It took Ender a moment to realize that he wasn't screaming in pain. "Did you see how fast I went? Did you see how I changed direction?" Soon, all of Dragon Army stopped work to watch Bean practice with the twine. The changes in direction were stunning, especially when you didn't know where to look for the twine. When he used the twine to wrap himself around the star, he attained speeds no one had ever seen before. It was 21:40 when Ender dismissed the evening practice. Weary, but delighted at having seen something new, his army walked through the corridors back to the barracks. Ender walked among them, not talking, but listening to their talk. They were tired, yes. A battle every day for more than 4 weeks, often in situations that tested their abilities to the utmost. But they were proud, happy, close. They had never lost, and they had learned to trust each other. They trusted their fellow soldiers to fight hard and well, trusted their leaders to use them rather than waste their efforts. Above all, they trusted Ender to prepare them for anything and everything that might happen. As they walked the corridor, Ender noticed several older boys seemingly engaged in conversations in branching corridors and ladderways. Some were in their corridor, walking slowly in the other direction. It became too much of a coincidence, however, that so many of them were wearing salamander uniforms, and that those who weren't were often older boys belonging to armies whose commanders most hated Ender Wiggin. A few of them looked at him and looked away too quickly. Others were too tense, too nervous, as they pretended to be relaxed. "What will I do if they attack my army here in the corridor? My boys are all young, all small, and completely untrained in gravity combat. When would they learn?" "Ho, Ender!" someone called. Ender stopped and looked back. It was Petra. "Ender, can I talk to you?" Ender saw in a moment that if he stopped and talked, his army would quickly pass him by and he would be alone with Petra in the hallway. "Walk with me," Ender said. "It's just for a moment." Ender turned around and walked on with his army. He heard Petra running to catch up. "All right, I'll walk with you." Ender tensed when she came near. Was she one of them, one of the ones who hated him enough to hurt him? "A friend of yours wanted me to warn you. There are some boys who want to kill you." "Surprise," said Ender. Some of his soldiers seemed to perk up at this. Plots against their commander were interesting news, it seemed. "Ender, they can do it. He said they've been planning it ever since you went commander, ever since I beat Salamander, you mean." "I hated you after you beat Phoenix Army, too, Ender." "I didn't say I blamed anybody." "It's true. He told me to take you aside today and warn you on the way back from the battle room to be careful tomorrow because, Petra, if you had actually taken me aside just now, there are about a dozen boys following along who would have taken me in the corridor. Can you tell me you didn't notice them?" Suddenly her face flushed. "No, I didn't." How can you think I did? Don't you know who your friends are?" She pushed her way through Dragon Army, got ahead of him, and scrambled up a ladderway to a higher deck. "Is it true?" asked Crazy Tom. "Is what true?" Ender scanned the room and shouted for two roughhousing boys to get to bed. "That some of the older boys want to kill you." "All talk," said Ender. But he knew that it wasn't. Petra had known something, and what he saw on the way here tonight wasn't imagination. "It may be all talk, but I hope you'll understand when I say you got 5 toon leaders who are going to escort you to your room tonight. Completely unnecessary. Humor us. You owe us a favor."
"I owe you nothing."
"You'd be a fool to turn them down." "Do as you want." He turned and left. The toon leaders trotted along with him. One ran ahead and opened his door. They checked the room, made Ender promise to lock it, and left him just before lights out. There was a message on his desk. "Don't be alone, ever, Dink." Ender grinned. So Dink was still his friend. "Don't worry, they won't do anything to me. I have my army." But in the darkness, he did not have his army. He dreamed that night of Stilson. Only he saw now how small Stilson was, only 6 years old, how ridiculous his tough guy posturing was. And yet in the dream, Stilson and his friends tied Ender so he couldn't fight back, and then everything that Ender had done to Stilson in life, they did to Ender in the dream. And afterward, Ender saw himself babbling like an idiot, trying hard to give orders to his army, but all his words came out as nonsense. He awoke in darkness, and he was afraid. Then he calmed himself by remembering that the teachers obviously valued him, or they wouldn't be putting so much pressure on him. They wouldn't let anything happen to him, nothing bad anyway. Probably when the older kids attacked him in the battle room years ago, there were teachers just outside the room waiting to see what would happen. If things had got out of hand, they would have stepped in and stopped it. I probably could have sat there and done nothing, and they would have seen to it that I came through all right. They'll push me as hard as they can in the game, but outside the game they'll keep me safe. With that assurance, he slept again, until the door opened softly, and the morning's war was left on the floor for him to find.